day is it? Asked Pooh. It is today, squeaked Piglet, my very favorite day. This is the beginning of a new day from our new podcast series, From My Kitchen Table, both inspired and created by my successful Women Create magazines. If you do not know me, I am Jo Packham, creator and editor-in-chief of What and Where Women Create. Today, we have profiled over 745 women from around the world and in over 254 award-winning books and magazines. These women consist of artists, foodies, designers, entrepreneurs, and creators of the unusual and the exceptional. Their personal stories are filled with triumph, perseverance, inspiration, and both a love and commitment to community. In our new series, From My Kitchen Table, we introduce you to women from big cities to small hamlets, some well-known and some you have never met. They create from their kitchen tables, a small room over the garage, a spare bedroom, a tiny, tiny kitchenette, dreamy studios, warehouses, and on a castle or forest floor, and sometimes even on a riverbank. These women have crafted amazing works of imagination, transformed cooking and baking into an art form, built successful businesses, inspired entire communities, and each has a story to tell. I can promise you, and you can trust me, no matter how easy they make the journey appear, it wasn't. They too started by taking a first step, together and alone, frightened and inspired, ready or not, each one moving ever forward, simply doing what they love to do, and that is create. Life is a series of journeys, and creativity is not just one of these journeys, but a way of life, an expression of a woman's heart and of her soul, a way of telling the world what she has seen and who she is. Welcome to From My Kitchen Table. This is the place to come together, to share the passion, the process, and the inspiration, the journeys, and the stories of a creative life. Join our fellow travelers, your kindred spirits, your very best friends, your new friends, and your yet unknown friends each week on our new podcast series, From My Kitchen Table. I'd like to welcome all of you to our new podcast, and I would like to tell you a little bit about me, Jo Packham, and then my two guests who are very near and dear to my heart, Sharon Payne Bolton and Linda Potter. So, about me, there is always a story to tell. The memories of those amazing times that you are certain you will never forget, and the flashbacks of those days that cannot be forgotten too soon. Where Women Create, What Women Create, Where Women Cook, and Where Women Create Work were a series of magazines created after a 17-year commitment to publishing books that led me on a second journey that mirrored the first in happy and broken hearts, times so difficult that I was pretty sure I could never face anyone again, and then at what seemed like the end of it all came a guardian angel by the name of Brooke Lark. Like Brooke, some angels are almost invisible, very quiet, and you must look very closely and listen very intently to both see and hear them. Others are larger than life, with an enthusiasm and sincerity that is rare in anyone's world these days, and this second angel of mine is Sharon Payne Bolton. If you persevere, if you do not give up on yourself when everyone else has, if you actually believe the stories you write or that are written for my magazines, then there will come a day that is so important that you have to write it down and share it so that it will never be forgotten. I needed help. I needed a huge ask. I was so afraid and feeling very guilty, but I had to do what I knew could be done, so I called my dear, dear friend Sharon and told her more about this new Women Create website and this video and what needed to happen, and that I realized it was almost impossible to fulfill my expectations under the time restraints. Sharon got busy and called a small part of her community in Sun Valley and invited them to be part of a video for our new Women Create website. It was early Friday morning, and by 9:30 there was a schedule of events, a Sunday night dinner at Cindy Hamlin's in her gorgeous yard for everyone to meet and brainstorm. At 9 a.m. Monday morning, each of the seven women were scheduled for a video of their studios and their work. There was 1 hour allotted to each artist, and then we had to move on to the next. At 7 p.m., we met again at my very, very special friend Linda Potter's house and celebrated with wine and tequila, shrimp from the grill with Harry and Potter filling in as private chefs, as a celebration of women back together, helping each other on a moment's notice, and creating in 2 days a video that will live in our hearts forever. This video may have been created by 8 of us during 2 magical, almost impossible to believe days of working together. But it is all about and for each of you and the loyal, lifelong friends that surround you and the love to create that fills each of your hearts in all that you do. This first podcast from my kitchen table is all about our first video and the women who made it together and made it happen. They have each been featured on the pages of my magazines, but I do hope if you are ever in Sun Valley that you will make time to meet them in person. Cindy Hamlin, Kim Howard, Sally Metcalf, Carrie Chesbo, Cindy Kirk, Linda Potter, and Sharon Payne Bolton. I will be forever grateful to each of them and all of them. They are a rare gift that I will treasure until the end of forever. They believe in themselves, in each other, and in all of us together. So, thank you for listening. I had to write my intro out so that I could read it because I knew I would get tongue-tied and start to cry because this has been such an emotional roller coaster. So let me introduce Sharon first. I asked them to write their bios. I want you to know it's about 20 words long. Sharon Payne Bolton is a mixed media artist with a studio in Ketchum, Idaho. She has shown her work in various galleries and shows, taught workshops in France, Australia, and around the United States, and is looking forward to teaching in person again. Recently, Sharon has launched 2 of her first online courses. I have to say to all of you that after you watch the podcast, you need to go watch the video on the website because it explains a lot about what we're talking about. Linda wrote a beautiful intro about all of us being in isolation and not being able to come together. And then finally, for a moment, we all, at the drop of a hat, with one telephone call from Sharon, everybody came to the table and created a miraculous event. I mean, I'm here to tell you. So Linda has a split personality, I've decided. And so she wrote 2 bios, and I am going to read them both because I think they both are her very personality, which is charming and delightful and generous and supportive. So her first is all about her personally. And it says, Linda Potter is an old woman who bleaches her hair and lives not in a shoe, but in 3 barns. She definitely likes shoes though, mostly black flats and red sneakers. She washes dishes without gloves and fusses with paints and such the same way. So her nails and fingers look just awful. Linda taught art to mostly first graders because she was pretty good at rainbows, hearts, and stick figures. I have to tell you that Linda is amazing at many things that go beyond rainbows, hearts, and stick figures. You would love everything she does. Now, her more professional introduction. Linda Potter's father's name was Art, and that was surely the beginning of her lifelong creative journey. Arthur Appleton passed away in 2008, but left behind a rich artistic legacy in the Ocala, Florida, Appleton Museum of Art and embedded in his daughter's heart. Linda welcomed me into her 3 barns almost 2 years ago and has been parceling out bits and pieces of her artistic soul to Women Create ever since. She was reluctant to let me include her story in the spring issue of Where Women Create, but acquiesced, and now she is here today to share more of her story and artistic passion. Linda, I have to say, before we start, Linda and Sharon are probably 2 of the most generous, trusting people I have ever known. When Sharon first invited me to Sun Valley, she did not have a place for me to stay, so she called Linda and said, can Joe come and stay with you? And Linda's like, yes, absolutely. They can tell you more of the backstory. I don't know it all. But Linda invited me into her beautiful home, and she said, come whenever you want, the door's unlocked. Just as a little insight, I did stay the night. I got up in the morning, and I got lost in the house. I couldn't find the front door, and I'd left my clothes in the car, and I was sneaking around this beautiful, beautiful family room and kitchen area, and I hear this voice behind me say, "Can I help you find something?" And I said, "Yes, the front door." And it was Potter. And so he gave me a grand tour. Potter is Linda's husband. So their generosity, their support, these women that I want to introduce you to are someone that I hope you all have the opportunity to meet someday, because they are a gift. So Linda, let's start with you. And you can tell our audience a little bit about you and who you are, and that everything I've said is true.
Well, everything you said is true. I am an old woman and I don't live in a shoe. So that part is all correct. And I look at my opportunity to have met you through my very good friend, Sharon, as one of the greatest gifts of my life, because you are such a giving person. And you are very good at bringing out things in people they don't know they have inside. And when you were in my house just for sleeping, that's what I was under the impression, that was all it was going to be. And you turned around to me and said, "Well, let's include you in my magazine." And I said, "But I'm not an artist." And you looked at me and said, "Yes, you are." And I said, "No, this is just my house." And you said, "You don't understand. You have made this house a piece of yourself. And the art that you've chosen is important because you put it there. And I want to have my readers share in that." So I reluctantly agreed to maybe think about it, and she pictures with the professional photographer of the house and of me. And she said we could always ace it, cut it out, and we wouldn't use it if we didn't like the pictures. Well, of course, she loved the pictures, and they were pretty good, I have to say. And she turned to me and said, "Okay, write your story." I went, "Wait, that wasn't part of the whole bargain. Don't you have people that do that?" And she said, "Well, no, because if I write your story, it's my voice, and I want it to be your voice." And as hard as it was to get that started, Joe was able to awaken a voice inside me that I didn't know was ever there. So I'm very much in deep appreciation, not only to Sharon for introducing me, but to you for introducing me to myself.
Okay, now I'm really gonna cry. So, you know what I love about this community is that everyone that I have ever met or been involved with is all about praising someone else. It's never all about me and how good I am and what I create. And it's always about you, you know, someone besides themselves. And it's sincere. It's very authentic, which is what makes it so emotional and so touching. I think especially after we've all been so isolated all this time, which is what the video is about, is it's just important that we get back together. This is over Zoom simply because they're in Idaho and I'm here, they're in Sun Valley, and I couldn't make the trip and we needed my expert guy here to watch over us. So let me introduce you to Sharon Payne Bolton, who is one of my angels. I have three angels. Actually, I have four. I have Brooke and Sharon and Linda and my cute little mother. Sharon, tell us all about you.
Well, before I do, I wanted to share a story about the porcupines. I don't know if you guys have heard about this. The porcupines were gathered together and they realized that the closer they were together, they were kind of poking each other and they were hitting each other a little bit with their quills, but they were cold, so they had to huddle together. So they went out and they were separate and they weren't getting poked by each other, but they got cold. But they found if they came back together and they huddled together, even though they were poking each other, they needed each other for that warmth. And it just sort of reminds me of what you were talking about, that we just, even though sometimes we poke each other, you know, we need each other. We have to be together.
I do have to say that when you talked about porcupines, I have this vision of everybody's porcupine being different and some of them being bright colors and painted and some of them wrapped in ribbons and all those kinds of things, because a group of artists would never just be porcupine. porcupines, right? They would have to be creative porcupines.
Artists on the pages of a magazine would never see porcupines without their artistic clothing.
That's right. Okay, finish telling us about you.
I'm here in Ketchum with an art studio, and to me it's still rather new, even though I've been in this studio for 2 years. My first weekend that the studio was organized, let's call it, was when the studio tour was here in our valley, and somehow Joe and I decided that was a good idea for you to come up here to meet some of the artists in our valley. So we met at my studio. Carrie Chesbo came and took you around to several studios. We met Linda later at the symphony. And before Linda got there, I asked, okay, so did you see any great studios today? Did you find anything? And Joe began to make her list, and she said, I found Carrie, I found Sally, I found Cindy, I found... At the end of her list, she included me. And I said, no, I'm not in that. I'm not ready. I just stacked my suitcases. That's pretty much so far, I feel like, I'm not ready. And Joe said, well, you know what? Let's just do it now, and then later we'll show another one of your after. This will be your before. You can do it. I believed her. And we did it. And it really did turn out to be a beautiful article. It's almost like I feel like I haven't really had a chance to be in my studio working because we've been, you know, busy.
Busy helping your friends? Is that what you've been busy doing?
No, we've been sharing creativity. That's what we've been doing.
It does sound like that. I want you all to know that it is true. I never do take no for an answer. And when I do see a great studio or people that I think are amazingly talented, I'm always so surprised that they're even the least bit insecure. Because when you're from the outside looking in, they do such amazing things. I mean, I have been in a lot of beautiful homes in my career. And Linda's home is one of the most, it is one of the most beautiful, but it is one of the most creative and lovingly re-established. They were horse barns, right, Linda? So you took them apart and brought them?
They were up from the East Coast. And we worked with a wonderful barn broker who unfortunately has passed away, Kenneth Epworth. And we brought the three barns here and put them back together. And we were able to repurpose lots of things I found at junk shows and art shows and various locales and make a home out of it. And it's been a lot of fun, but the most fun was sharing it. And you made that possible, not only with the friends that have come here, but through the pages of your magazine. And I have to say that after our reunion Sunday night and all the artists working in their studios last Monday, when we all came together here, I was a bit nervous because it was the first time all these real artists were going to come into my home. And I thought, oh, what if they don't like it? Or, you know, what if they see things that, you know, I didn't intend and they don't feel welcome. But from the moment everybody walked in the door, maybe it was the tequila, I don't know. But from the moment they walked in the door, we just had such a great time sharing about how we needed each other. And that was the real importance of what came out of that two-day affair, is that we all do need each other. And when we were locked up for so long, everything was just so sterile that it became obvious that when we finally could unmask and actually touch each other, that there was something so special that we had forgotten we had. And when it blossomed, when the spark came and we were back together again, it was extraordinary. And I think everybody walked away from that night thinking, this is the beginning of something very special.
Oh, I have to agree with that. I think you know, as I sit here and listen to both you and Sharon and myself, I have to say this in all honesty, I'm not a lover of podcasts because I guess it's kind of like talking on the phone. I like to be in the room with everybody. I like to feel the presence of everybody there. And you don't sincerely, I don't think, get to know each other because you only have such a short period of time, right? And I really want everybody to know you too, as much as I know you, because like I said before, you are a gift and I would like to give your gifts to all of them. And so I think one of the ways that we can learn more about you is by asking some questions that you can answer. And then some of them, like Linda, we didn't have this one written down, but I think the three of us should define in our own way what a real artist is. Because you said, I'm not an artist. I'm not a real artist, right? And I would have to disagree like 120%. So what is your definition of a real artist?
Well, I guess it would go back to the fact that when I went to high school and would walk by all the art rooms, I would see these beautiful works of art in the windows outside in the hallway and say, oh, I could never do that. So I actually became a math major and went on to do that in college and taught algebra and geometry. So I never did consider myself a real artist. But when we moved to California from Florida and the California schools had eliminated art education in the elementary schools, I was horrified that my children wouldn't get the opportunities that I had had to walk into a magical room with a happy teacher in the front saying, today we're going to get messy and create. So I volunteered to make sure my children got art in school. And I didn't want to try to teach them art at home because I wanted them to value it. And I got all sorts of books and I went in. And so I never really considered myself an artist, but more of an enabler. And I enabled a lot of children to grow and love art and to feel that art was definitely something that should be part of their daily routine. And I think that's my greatest accomplishment.
Well, I would say it is a great accomplishment, yes. Well, Sharon, you, by all standards, are considered a real artist. So how would you define a real artist? What is a real artist to you?
You know what? I really think that is such a great question. And I questioned it when I began making and selling art. And I think a lot of people do question what an artist is. I think it's a label, but to me, I feel that we all have an artist within us, but it manifests in different ways. So to me, an artist is a creator, and sometimes it's a canvas, and sometimes it's in some sort of design. It took me a really long time before I could say that I'm an artist. I'm not sure why it took so long, because sometimes it's how much education you have, or if you went to art school, or if you're showing your work in a gallery, or if there's so many different sort of qualifiers. And I think when I finally said I'm an artist was when I had a show and sold my work. And that was the beginning. It was really uncomfortable when I would say that I'm an artist or put that on my business card. It was always a difficult thing. But to me, I think creativity is something that we all have. We just have to get in there and find it.
I think your wall of suitcases is definitely a piece of art. I mean, I think everything you've done in your studio is so beautifully done. I came home and from the last visit with, and I'll put a picture up on the website so people can see it, so we're not talking out of turn, but of the new lamp that you created with all of the pieces, I covet that, right? It is so beautiful. So I think everything you touch is probably part of your artistic behavior and gift. And I have to say that the definition of an artist for me is someone that has a true passion for something. So that can be decorating, music, even I've been watching the Olympics, and even sports. I mean, those kids on those balance beams and those runners, I mean, it's a true art form. It's a true passion and a dedication. So for me, because I don't consider myself a true artist either, but I'm so passionate about these magazines that I'm willing to quietly accept the designation as artist, and I'm very proud to do that because I think it's one of the nicest terms, the most sought after terms ever. It seems like everybody wants to be an artist. They're either artistic or they aren't artistic, right? And you don't say that about many things. I think people with a passion, it's the people that don't have passions that make me sad because they truly aren't artists. Let me ask you another question. I think as artists or creative people, we're inspired by other people. We get our inspiration from other people. And so tell me, Sharon, tell me what book inspired you most in your art and why?
Yeah, I'd have to really rewind on that one. I think when I saw the book by Andy Goldsworthy, mm-hmm. he takes nature and he arranges it. He designs and photographs in nature. And that was probably the beginning for me where it just was mind-blowing to me to see his work and what he did, and that was considered art, that he was an artist. And I loved that he wasn't painting on a canvas. He was taking rocks and ice and flowers and everything else to design in nature. And I think that was probably the beginning of the, you know, propelling as far as inspiration was really that book. And a side note, one of my very first shows, I sold a piece of art to a woman who at the very time had Andy Goldsworthy at her house here in our valley. He was at her, I met Andy Goldsworthy's mother. So he was at her house designing some trees and some rocks and sort of a permanent installation. And so that kind of made a full circle for me. I think it was maybe after that is when I decided I could call myself an artist.
And we'll put information about his book, about what everybody is inspired by on the website too, because I am not familiar with him. So I would like to know more about him. So Linda, what book inspired your art?
Well, it goes back a little bit before the book, but it'll make sense. In my first introduction of myself, I said I could do rainbows, hearts, and stick figures better than the first graders, and I could. But because I was teaching first grade art every week, one of the other mothers in our community who was an artist asked me to teach drawing to the sixth grade. And I panicked. And I said, no, you don't understand. I can stay ahead of these little 6 and 7 year old kids, but a sixth grade girl or boy is gonna see right through me and know that I can't draw anything but those stick figures. So she said, don't worry, I can teach you how to teach the class. And so we went to her home and she had us copy this page of lines. And I did it. And then she said, turn it over, which I did. And there was Igor Stravinsky sitting in a chair. And it was an object lesson from the book Drawing on the Right Side of the Brain by Betty Edwards. And I have to say, I've not met her mother, but I'm sure she's lovely. And I know that that book is something that changed my mind, because one of the things it did is to say that if you look at a person and say, oh my gosh, I can't draw that. I can't draw a nose. I can't draw an ear. And you get this little voice in your head that tells you constantly that you're not able to do it and you're not good enough. But if you have the drawing upside down that you might be copying, all you're copying are lines. And your brain says, oh, that line's about 30 degrees north of flat, and you know, it wiggles down about 3 inches, and this line connects over here. And you just concentrate on lines who are very friendly to you. And then turning it over and seeing that it is actually something that you yourself would never have been able to draw had you set out to draw that, to copy that picture, just showed me that if we can all turn off the negative voices inside ourselves, we'll find out that indeed we are all artists, and we just have to find the voice of our artistic soul and let it out.
That book to me is genius, and I think it's probably changed more lives in the art community than any book ever written. That's actually my book too that I would have chosen. I went years and years and years ago. I've never considered myself an artist, but my partner at the time was an artist, and she registered us for Betty Edwards' class in Southern California, and I spent 6 days with her teaching us art from, you know, drawing on the right side of your brain. And when I walked in there, they can show you exactly when you stop drawing. I stopped drawing in the third grade. They have mm-hmm. you do an exercise and they can show you when you stop drawing. And when I left there, I mean, I'm like you. I felt like, oh my, I'm an artist, right? And it was the most liberating experience of my entire career, because her entire theory is you can do anything you want if you just learn the five steps and practice. She believes that everything has five steps, everything. And you just need music, dance, whatever it is. And you just need to learn the five steps. And then you can take it from there. And she's right. I think she's very right. Do you guys have a question you want to ask each other? Linda, you ask us a question.
Well, Sharon, you know, and this gets back to friendship. A friend of mine and yours asked me to come to her house because you had offered to come over and teach her and a couple of friends how to do one of your wonderful little books. And I went and I was, you know, oh, I don't know if I can do this, but of course she showed us all how to do it. And I left feeling inspired. So when the opportunity came for a 3-day class, I took it. And then during that class, you said, oh, I'm going to teach in France. And there I was, having made two books, and I was pretty proud of them. I don't know if they were great books, but I like them. And so I said, you know, I'm going to do this. And I looked at the list of all the people that were going to do it, and I didn't know any of them. And I said, I want to do it anyway. And so I signed up all by myself to go to France with, I only knew the teacher, but that was probably the most important person to know. But I want to know if you understand how special you are. And I know it sounds like I'm trying to, you know, overly compliment you, but you have this knack and ability to draw people in and to not only help them find their creativity, but to let them step out of their comfort zone. And that's not easy. And how long do you think that has been occurring? Do you think that you've always had that, or was there a special point in your life when you found that teaching art was just as important to you as creating art?
You choked me up a little bit. I don't think I know. Your first question was, do you know? I don't think I know. I think that to be able to share, for me, is one of the greatest gifts that I feel. I love being able to share. And when you said that you couldn't do something, or I do have people who come into my workshops that have their mother with them, they kind of pulled them along on, you know, against their will, or a daughter comes along with a mom sometimes against her will. And the one of them will say to me, oh, I can't, I'm not creative. I'm not an artist, I can't do this. And I think, because I have felt that same way. I have felt in college, same thing. I walked by the art and I saw them all carrying their easels and their, you know, paints. And I longed to be one of them, but I didn't know it at the time because my parents told me I had to go into business. So I just didn't even consider it. So I think if it's in there and it wants to come out, I love being there to witness it. And a lot of times in a workshop, I approach it in a different way so that I trick you, kind of like turning your drawing upside down. I trick you into starting. I trick you into not getting into your head too much. And that's a lot of what I do in my workshops. I just want to say thank you for giving me a really big compliment.
Well deserved.
That's one thing about this group, is all they do is compliment each other, right? I don't think I've ever heard anybody, you two especially, ever say an unkind word or be too busy or not be willing to step up to the plate. It is amazing to me, because I'm going to give part of the credit for that to your creative spirits, because I have a group of friends that are not creative. They don't want to be creative. They don't wish they were creative. They're happy not being creative. And it's a totally different personality. They're always looking for something to do. They're always lost. They're a little more, they're not as giving. They're a little more focused on themselves. It is like living in two worlds side by side. this creative world and this non-creative world. And I mean, it has had such an impact on me that I was born and raised in Ogden, Utah. My whole family's there, and I love Ogden, Utah. I'm an Ogden girl, homegrown. And I'm looking for a place in Sun Valley because I can't live there full time because I can't leave my little grandkids, but I could certainly spend 3/4 of my time there. And so I hope you realize what an impact you have on just everybody around you, even those you don't know. It's just, this sounds really weird, but it's almost like an aura or a halo or something. I mean, I can see it, right? I can see it when you walk in the room. It's a different kind of approach to people. So thank you for being you. Sharon, would you like to ask Linda a question?
I think I could probably ask Linda the same question. I don't think she understands the influence, especially when she just admitted she was nervous about these women coming to her home on Monday. That is a shock because your environment that you've created is so magical and it's so warm, and each of the pieces of art that you've collected it has a story. And so you're also a story collector as far as I'm concerned. I accuse Joe of being a story collector. I don't think you know how beautiful your soul is to include all of these artists and to be, the first time I asked Linda, I called Linda, she had offered if I ever needed to use her home for really anything. And it was an incredible offer. And I called and I asked if I could run a workshop for a foundation here in town, for a foundation. And absolutely, she welcomed this whole group into her home. And Joe, when you say this sort of aura, I think being around people that are so giving, like both of you, so not selfish, like both of you, it's a bit contagious. I mean, it really is, because I think if somebody treats you that way or is a certain way and you see how attractive it is, you want to emulate that too. And so I think even you, Joe, the second or third time I came to Ogden, and you just dropped everything. It was a really busy weekend and dropped everything. And I think the attractive part of when you are around someone and you recognize it, you want to be that person too. And I see that in both of you, for sure.
I thank you.
Was the question. I'm going to try to find it in there. It's like going through all your two pieces and opening up the one with a question. But what I'm getting from that, and it is something about this house. I mean, we have a house that's built out of three old barns, and we often say, I wonder if these walls could talk, what they would tell us about the last 200 years of their existence and where they've been and the animals and the people that have brushed alongside, you know, certain boards and told their secrets. But you're bringing in the group from Higher Ground, which is a wonderful foundation in town that helps veterans and their families come back to life after terribly difficult and service overseas that have left them sometimes feeling that they're not worthy. I think having that energy in the house where they were making boxes to put their memories in, and sitting in this house and listening to them and watching some tears and watching the creativity there, it enhanced my house. It was so incredible to have this energy in the house. And even though we all said goodbye and we were thankful that they'd come and cleaned up and gone, they left a big part of their souls here that is part of the house now. And that's the way I felt with the artistic women coming in the house. It was pretty exciting to have these people that I respected so, and I had artwork from most of them. And one of the fun things is I have three of Cindy Hamlin's birdhouses, but I've never put them outside for the birds because I like them too much to share them with the real birds. So they sit inside my house because I just love them and I like looking at them and I don't want them to fade. And I don't want to fat old robin to sit on one of the branches and break it. So, you know, it's just, it's exciting to have a home that you can share with others. And it's heartwarming to feel that when they walk through the front door, they get the feeling I would have always hoped that they would, because it is a big imposing house. And my favorite thing that anybody ever says is, oh my gosh, it's so cozy. It's so welcoming. And you wouldn't think of that of a house that had a big number of square feet, but you've all proven to me that I actually was successful in creating that.
You are a master. You're not just successful. You're a master at success. And I want to remind all of our listeners that I'm really self-conscious about all of us talking about stories that you don't know. So they're kind of like insider stories and you feel left out. So what we will make sure of is that on the website, if you will go visit the website, womencreate.com, you will be able to listen to the podcast again. And then there will also be the stories that were in the magazines of both of these women and special extra photography so that you can see the parts of the house. In the magazines, we're limited to how many photographs we can put in. So of Sharon and Linda, I probably have, what, 200 or 300 photographs of each of you, so on your studios and your houses. So we'll take some of the really beautiful shots and put them on the website, and you can go enjoy them. And there will be a place on the website where you'll send them all to me, because I'll be the filter. But if you have a question that you would like Sharon or Linda to answer, or a comment that you would like to give to them, then we will give you that information and pass it along so that they can answer if they want. Sharon has an Instagram site. What is your Instagram site?
Sharon Payne Bolton.
Okay. And Linda, you don't have one, do you? Do you have an Instagram page? Nope. You're too busy entertaining to do that. So, okay. So I have some short questions that require short answers. And so I will ask each of you, Linda, what do you do when you're afraid?
When I'm afraid, I pray, and I find great comfort and solace in that. And I check in with my friends, you know, because I think it's wonderful to share joy, and that is an expanding emotion that is so fulfilling to everybody. But in sharing fear, it diminishes your fear, because your friends can reassure you that everything's okay. And sometimes we don't see that behind the object or the idea or the threat that we feel is really our lives are fine if we just keep walking through them and trust in ourselves, trust in God, and trust in our friends.
I want all of our listeners to listen to that very carefully, because what I know about artists and the creative community as a whole, whether you're a musician or whatever it is you choose, is that there are many who are insecure and suffer from depression. And it's not often talked about. It's getting to be more talked about now. I think it's coming out after COVID, but before it wasn't as easy. And I think if you know that you have a friend or two that you can call up and say, you know what, I'm having a really bad day, I need a friend, I think you would be surprised at the result. And it makes the friend feel needed and wanted and important and like she can help. So I'd like our listeners to realize that you're not in this alone, that you're in this together with all of us, and there are lots of us who can help. So Sharon, what do you do when you're afraid?
When I'm afraid, I, for the most part, try to remember there's a reason that I'm afraid, and that I try to remember that if I push through the fear, that it will, for the most part, have some sort of reward on the other end. For the most part, when I feel fear, it's like I fear deadlines. But deadlines really are our friends, and deadlines have taken me further than I ever thought I could go because I had that deadline. But yeah, I think when I'm also when I'm afraid, I do reach out to my friends. I do the same thing. A lot of times I think we have pretend stories in our head that we've spun, and we need to get the input from our friends who aren't so close to the issue at hand.
Okay, so I have to talk about when I'm afraid, because I'm afraid all the time. And my children have been worried about me since the day they were born, I think, because I'm so emotional, and part of that is driven by fear. So I have also been a frequent visitor to several different psychologists throughout my career, because I do believe in getting help when you need it. And I had one, Dr. Parker, who was like my grandfather, and his theory for being afraid was, I cry, I'm a crier. It is what it is. I could be a movie star because I could cry on command. You know how when they say you have to cry now? I can do that. So, but his way of taking care of fear or loneliness or all of those things that turn us inside out was that you give yourself a certain period of time. It can be 10 minutes. It can be 10 hours. If it's really, really traumatic, it can be 10 days. And during that time period, you can feel as sorry for yourself and be just afraid as you want to. You can cry your heart out. You can do whatever you want. But when the alarm goes off and the 10 minutes is over, you're done. And you just pick yourself up and pretend like, you know, you can conquer the world. And it took me a while, but it works. It really does work. You get in a mindset that it's like, you know, everybody's picking on me and I hate the world and I work so hard and I do this and I do that and I'm going to feel sorry for myself. And I give myself 4 or 5 hours and then I've, you know, cried it out and done everything I need to do and just go on. So I think it's nice that we all have different techniques.
Well, your story reminded me of my Sculpture One teacher at the Academy of Art. Peter Schifrin was the head of the sculpture department. He came to my studio with a coin and he handed me this coin. It was a brass coin and it said fear on the front of it. And as he handed it to me, he said, when we're in fear, a lot of times we're frozen and we can't move. He said, so when we're in fear, there's something you need to do. And he flips the coin over and it says act. So I think for you, yes, you can stay in that fear, but then once you flip that coin over, you're done.
Yeah, totally done. I think what is most telling about people is the quotes that they love the most. And most people, I think, have two quotes, one for themselves that means something to them, and then one that is kind of for their friends or that they would say to a friend at the end of a letter or, you know, that when they think about it, they think about friends. So one or two quotes, Sharon, what are yours?
One for me is by Rumi, life is a balance of holding on and letting go. I just really resonate with that one. And I've got one more that I'm trying to think. It's a Dr. Seuss quote. You never know the value of a moment until it becomes a memory. I don't know if that's quoted properly. That's just from my memory. I think
that's good. Linda, what are yours?
Well, I'm going to give you one because, as I told you in my first biography, I'm almost 70, so I'm thinking that my memory's not so good. I have lots of quotes written down, and I kind of know where to go to them if I want to quote for one thing or another. But as you opened this podcast, I'd like to close it with another quote from A.A. Milne, about poo, because it's a quote that I've had in my memory and in my heart since I was a child. And it's, what would I do, I said to poo, if it wasn't for you? And poo said, true. And I would like to say, I don't know what I would do if it weren't for the two of you, because you have enriched my life to the point that I'm pretty excited about where we're all going to go together from this point forward.
Thank you. I'm also going to end this podcast with a very sincere thank you to Linda and Sharon and to the women, the other women who helped put the video together, which I can't encourage you enough to watch on the website. It is Sharon stepped up to the plate. I mean, her and Wyatt, her son, have edited it, put it all together. There are thousands of pictures. It is insane what she's done. So you really do need to go watch it and be inspired by it. My two quotes are, to be good is not enough when you dream of being great. And for both of you, my quote is, I love you with 1,000 hearts. Thank you again for joining us today on our very first ever From My Kitchen Table podcast. It is our hope that you are inspired by our story of women reconnecting and women helping women. It is so important for us to be part of something that is bigger than ourselves. We also hope you will listen in to our second podcast, From My Kitchen Table, and visit womencreate.com to check the schedules of both our podcast and our new video series, Maker Moments. See you then.